Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in on Monday night. Marcy Winograd. Is going to join us a little bit later in the program, top of the next hour. We have a lot of stuff for you tonight. Sex, drugs, and horror in the Gulf of Mexico. But we're going to start tonight with a missive from Prairie Attu, because I like the title of what he sent me today. The title said, Learn from the Dragon. I don't know. I just kind of like that. Prairie Attu writes, the euro went to new lows on the news of Spain having seized one of its savings banks. This reportedly led to the sharp drop of the New York Stock Exchange at the close, but there are other factors like China indicating it will go ahead with revaluing the yuan, their money. This would be to the advantage of the real U.S. economy and not to the advantage of Wall Street banks or the Dow 30 companies that do 60% of their business outside the U.S. Pundits are predicting a shift from the dollar as a safe haven to the yen if China goes ahead with this, so you can expect the wild swings in the markets. Some pundits are pushing the idea that if China were to allow the yuan to float on the market, it would go down sharply rather than rise against U.S. dollar. China has reportedly been spending $200 billion U.S. dollars annually to maintain the exchange rate they want. And you would think they would know exactly what would happen, or rather they would just make it happen. $2.5 trillion in currency reserves gives you clout. The only people with more money than China are the Wall Street banks. Oh, God. Who have unlimited funds to apply to their vision of the world thanks to a blank check at the Federal Reserve. One of the on-again, off-again provisions of the financial reform bill working its way through Congress was supposed to slam the vault door shut for these banks if they continue to act as investment banks. It could be that China has been waiting to see if any of this reform really happens. They know fully well how dangerous Wall Street banks are and aren't going to waste their yuans on a fool's errand. The collapse of the euro and the draconian cutbacks that are being proposed for the middle class of Europe also has China worried, as Europe has been an even bigger market than the U.S. Their trade is heavily concentrated in the pigs countries, Portugal, Italy, Germany, Spain, that bought into the Chicago School of Economics snake oil. This neocon paradise did away with their own industries in favor of Wall Street's easy money from privatization of the common and exotic debt instruments. China's leaders aren't stupid. They know Wall Street engineered this. They even made off with a few billion from Chinese state industries. That was a mistake. Prompt refunds were demanded and gotten from the Wall Street banks. China deals harshly with people who screw them, a practice we should adopt for our own survival. Prairie2.com. Prairie2.com. The activity on Wall Street today, I didn't pay any attention to. I was just, we spent a good bit of today trying to teach Molly to ride her bike without the training wheels. Scott sent me this. It's kind of an update. We mentioned it in passing back when this NRA convention occurred. But Scott, who signs a gun-toting liberal in Arkansas, he wrote, Mike, I thought it was pretty ironic that at the annual NRA meeting held recently in Charlotte, North Carolina, all open and concealed carry of firearms was banned. Why? I honestly don't get that, other than the fact that they are hypocritical, cowardly little bastards who need those penis extensions when they're out in the real world. Really. Scott writes, I wonder if Sarah Palin had to pass through a metal detector before she made her way to the podium as the featured speaker. What a bunch of hypocrites. Yeah, they are. They're worse than hypocrites. They're yellow-bellied cowards.
You can't take my gun.
Oh, some sex. Nikki Haley. Have you heard about this? Nikki Haley. She's a candidate for a Republican governor of South Carolina. Right now, she's a state legislator. But she wants to be South Carolina's first female governor. That's, you know, it's nice. You know, it's good. She is a tea bagger in more ways than one, apparently. She's denying allegations by a conservative blogger that the two of them had an affair. She and the blogger. The blogger, whose name is Will Folks, claimed on his website today that he had a relationship with Nikki Haley, who is a married mother of two. The conservative blogger wrote, quote, "Several years ago, prior to my marriage, I had an inappropriate physical relationship with Nikki." That's it. A few hours later, Nikki released a statement denying the claim and calling it a disgraceful smear designed to derail her campaign. She said, Nikki Haley said, "I have been 100% faithful to my husband throughout our 13 years of marriage. This claim against me is categorically and totally false. It is sad but not surprising that this disgraceful smear has taken form less than a week removed from the release of a poll showing our campaign with a significant lead. It is quite simply South Carolina politics at its worst." End quote. Poor baby. I don't think the blogger is he a politician? Well, he does. It gets a little murky here now. You paying attention? Will Folks said he admitted the affair now because Nikki's political enemies were threatening to make it public. Oh, so this rat bastard comes forward like a real gentleman and says, "Hey, guess who I was boinking?" What is with people that have to screw and tell? What is that? Huh? I mean, I don't get that. If you're going to have an affair, what's the point in doing it? And then, I guess what I did, I had an affair with him, her, him, it, her, him. Loudmouth bastards. Whatever happened to the idea of discretion? Huh? Anyway, this real gentleman, Will Folks, said he admitted the affair now because Nikki's political enemies were threatening to make it public. Now, here's where it gets murky. Will Folks, the guy who's getting all this info out, is a former spokesman for Governor Mark Sanford. Yeah, I am. Who infamously and tearfully confessed to his own affair with a woman he called his soulmate. Sanford, who leaves office in January, has campaigned for Nikki. And so has Sanford's ex-wife, Jenny. The one who was cheated on by... wait a second. Mark cheated on Jenny and supports Nikki, who cheated on her husband with Will. And Jenny, Mark's ex-wife, backs Nikki. Oh, I don't know. Nikki's campaign had gained steam in recent weeks, getting backing from the conservative Tea Party movement and scoring a big endorsement from former Alaska Gov Sarah Palin. The primary is June 8. Oh, my God. I love it. I love it. I love it. I've been married for 13 years, and I've been completely faithful to my husband. Woohoo! All right, we're going to take a break here. We will return. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberals need to take responsibility. They can't run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans. A form of suicide. Republican side!
Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Yeah. All right, we had some sex. Now some rock and roll. You heard about the Texas cops who mistook actual weed for weed. They really did. They spent hours, what turned out, doing what amounts to yard work. Police officer in Corpus Christi, Texas, discovered in somebody's yard this huge cache of plants. And initially it was pegged by officials speaking to local news as, quote, one of the largest marijuana plant seizures in the police department's history here in Corpus Christi. Turned out to be a relatively common prairie flower of little significance. The officers spent hours laboring to tag and remove up to 400 plants from, oh, it was a city park, discovering only after a battery of tests that they had been sweating over mere, it's called horse mint, a member of the mint family, effectively turning their ambitious drug bust into mere yard work. The plants, which bear very few aesthetic similarities to cannabis, were reported by an unnamed Ute who came across them while riding a bike in the park at 8 p.m. last Thursday. I wonder what the Ute had been smoking. Upon visual inspection, police apparently agreed that the inoffensive plants had to go. Yes, by God, that's marijuana. Ultimately, officers were reduced to conducting chemical tests to learn their weed was really just that, a weed. A local TV or a local NBC affiliate in the comments section, somebody wrote, that shows exactly the caliber of police work that is done in Corpus Christi, Texas. Did they have to tag and bag 400 plants before they realized they were pulling weeds? Oh, good Lord. And Iran has, you talk about irony on a whole different level. I mean, this is irony up where most of us never even aspire to think about. But here it is. The National Iranian Drilling Company, Iran, has renewed its offer to assist the U.S. in reining in an ecologically disastrous oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. The head of the special drilling operation at the drilling company pointed to the experience gained by Iranian experts in containing huge oil leaks during the eight-year Iraq-imposed war in the 1980s and said, quote, Iranian technical teams have had major achievements in oil well capping, and the Gulf of Mexico oil rig is not a great feat in comparison. The guy went on as saying there is, at any rate, an ecological disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, and its negative consequences will affect everyone. That is why we, if we receive a suitable response from relevant officials, we can examine the issue and contribute to its resolution. Now, the irony is, back in 1953, it was the BP. It was not called British Petroleum then. I think it was called the British Iranian Oil or British Persian Oil Conglomerate or something. But it that was the company that engineered the coup with the assistance. The Iranian oil, or the BP at the time, went to the CIA, which wasn't that old at the time, and said, look, they have voted in a leader, Mohammad Mossadegh, who's going to nationalize our oil. Please remove him from office. And the CIA was only too glad to do that. So here we are a half century later, more than half a century later, and the Iranians are offering to assist British Petroleum in stopping another massive criminal act, this time in the Gulf of Mexico. So far, no answer from either the government of the United States or British Petroleum. But irony on a level that normally you just don't. I mean, normally when we talk about irony on this program, we talk about, you know, little ironic events, little bits of irony. But for the government of Iran to offer its assistance to stop a criminal act of uncalculable proportions committed by BP, to offer their assistance when it was BP that destroyed Iran half a century ago, is just astonishing. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 25 before the hour, Marcy Winograd will join us after the break at the top of the hour. From Big Myrtle's Tea Shop and Egg Emporium. That's a blog site, bigmyrtle.blogspot.com. Long article, but just a couple of graphs out of it. The real scope of the tragedy in the Gulf of Mexico has not even been hinted at yet in the mainstream media. Talk of dispersants and the evaporation of oil has dulled our sensibilities on the nightly news. But anyone who remembers their basic physics knows that nothing simply disappears. Where is the oil being dispersed to? It's being dispersed to a vertical column beneath the surface of the Gulf of Mexico, which happens to be where there is a lot of fish. It's where a lot of fish live. A lot of fish. Fish that form the basis for a whole other industry, a whole other lifestyle, a whole other economic basis for an entire region. And it is going to, and it's going to, quite unlike the oil, simply disappear. The fish will. Dead zones in the ocean are not easily repaired once they appear. Coral reefs, which form the basis for whole underwater ecospheres, take centuries to develop. And in just a few short weeks, already at least a fifth of existing underwater coral in the Gulf has been contaminated. Those are conservative estimates. And the oil is still gushing out. Think about that. Even if not one more drop of oil were to enter the Gulf, 20% of it, by the most conservative estimates, is already likely to be dead for centuries. There is simply no repairing that damage. And it is not likely to be limited to the Gulf either. This oil is going to end up washing up on the shores of Great Britain before all is said and done. British Petroleum is quite literally coming home. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. Kate writes, refusing help from Iran is similar, just like we refused help from Cuba and Mexico after Katrina. That's true. Well, we have our pride, you know. We're not going to take any help from any commies, especially not brown commies. My God. There was a story in the Mirror of the UK, the Mirror, a newspaper. And Kelly sent me the link. Kelly wrote, hello, is anyone out there? Why isn't this news on every single front page in America? Why do I have to get the news from outside of America? I always joke to people that I had four kids just to make sure my genes made it through the bottleneck. They always laugh and play along. I don't think they really get what I mean. They respond with a smile and a nod. So, where do we live? How do we prepare? Can we survive? Shouldn't now be when we start forming intentional communities? Or do we all think we can survive trying to fend for ourselves? The thought keeps occurring to me that learning how to use a ham radio might not be a bad idea. There better be a bunch of people that know how to clean water, grow food, and keep bees, too. Sure would be nice if everyone who's awake could work together. Looks like we need to go back to where we came from. My grandpa used to keep bees. All the folks on that side of the family grew food. Their kids, my cousins, are participating in the chainmail going around, encouraging us all to reject the new dollar coin that does not include the words, "In God we trust." I don't even know if it's real. I don't care. What a waste of time. How do these words, or lack of words, really amount to what was that old expression, a hill of beans? It's so freaking pathetic to me that they're concerning themselves with that kind of nonsense. Meanwhile, our world is being destroyed by the very people to whom they pledge their allegiance to, the corporations. The crazy thing is, this side of my family is working class people. Cops, teachers, cafeteria workers, transportation workers, military. When the older generation was alive, visiting the hills of Western North Carolina, always meant going home with a box of canned veggies, pickled fruit, and sweet honey or molasses when we left, and 5 pounds heavier from eating the pound cake, the fudge, and the sweet tea. Those folks are all dead and gone now. Now we're all that's left. I'm all that's left. They are asleep. I'm just 35 now, and that was when I was a kid. My parents left the countryside for jobs in the city. They went west to Dallas, Texas. They ran from that. I wish they hadn't. At least if they had stayed, I'd know how to grow my own food. Maybe have a little piece of land to get lost on. I'm in Oregon now, thinking of getting close to the mountains. Maybe I'll go to Colorado someplace. How did everything go to hell in such a short amount of time? The high fructose corn syrup has only been in our food for 30 years now. So much has changed recently that has been so damaging to the grand scheme of things. I don't know how to be productive about this. I'm trying to find something to hold on to hope with. I'm not having much luck. Kelly. Lengthy introduction to what he sent me from the UK, from the Mirror, the newspaper there. Scientists are warning the future of mankind is at risk from the rapid extinction of animal and plant life. Now, see, the Christian fundamentalists love this because they all believe that when there's enough death on this planet, animal death, plant death, human death, piles, masses of corpses, it will please their Savior. And he will come sliding down this huge corpse pile and rescue all of them. But the Mirror reports an alarming United Nations report revealed countries have failed to hit targets to stop nature's mass decline. It found mammals, reptiles, birds, amphibians, and fish plummeted by a third between 1970 and 2006. On top of this, experts fear nearly a quarter of plant species are now dying out. Coral reefs, lakes, and the Amazon forest are facing tipping points while rivers are under great threat from algae because of the pollution from fertilizers. With the world's population continuing to spiral up, it is feared the loss of nature will deplete food supplies, fresh water, and medicines while sending poverty soaring. Bill Jackson of the International Union for the Conservation of Nature warned, quote, 21% of all mammals, 30% of all known amphibians, 12% of all known birds, and 27% of reef-building corals assessed are threatened with extinction. If the world made equivalent losses in share prices and stock prices, there would be a rapid response and widespread panic. spokesman for the UN Convention on Biological Diversity said, quote, "The news is not good. We continue to lose biodiversity at a rate never before seen in our history." End quote. And it goes on here. I don't know. I shouldn't read this stuff. You know, the danger zones are the Amazon, lakes, coral reefs. And then we have the disaster. Thanks a lot, Kelly, for sending it to me. Then we have the situation, this horrific, disastrous, poisonous eruption going on in the Gulf of Mexico. And they still haven't done anything about it. You know that? Haven't done a thing about it. Nothing. Nothing is done. Oh, and by the way, was it in Sunday's Times or Today's Times? In the days since Obama announced a moratorium on permits for drilling new offshore oil wells and a halt to a controversial type of environmental waiver that was given to Deepwater Horizon, at least 7 new permits for various types of drilling and 5 environmental waivers. Waivers! You don't have to do any environmental impact studies. Never mind. Go ahead. Have been granted. The records also indicate that since April 20th explosion in the Gulf, federal regulators have granted at least 19 environmental waivers for Gulf drilling projects and at least 17 drilling permits, most of which were for types of work like that on the Deepwater Horizon shortly before it exploded, pouring a ceaseless current of oil into the Gulf of Mexico. Asked about the permits and waivers, officials at the Department of the Interior and the Minerals Management Service, which regulates drilling, pointed to public statements. They point to public statements by Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, reiterating that the agency had no intention of stopping all new oil and gas production in the Gulf. Look at the statement. See, there it goes. There it is. There's the statement. No, we're not going to stop that. Why in the world would we stop that? I mean, why? There's no reason to stop that. Department of the Interior official said in a statement that the moratorium was meant only to halt permits for the drilling of new wells. It was not meant to stop permits for new work on existing projects like the Deepwater Horizon was at one time. Stay with us. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. The species has amused itself to
Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. In about 17 minutes, we'll have Marcy Winograd on the program. She's the one running against Jane Harman, right, in California. Okay, so despite this, all this talk about the moratorium, all kinds of permits are being granted to perform the same kind of hole punching into the floor of the Gulf of Mexico as the Deepwater Horizon incident, disaster, catastrophe, was all about. Crude oil still pouring into the Gulf, washing up on the beaches. Have you watched some of the video today? I believe on 60 different areas of 3 states now, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi. Oil. So, oh, and getting into the wetlands, into the mangrove swamps, into the breeding areas. And that will be the end of those areas. The end. You don't clean up marshland. You cannot do it. It is a physical impossibility. Once the oil's in there, it's dead. That's it. And the oil's in there. Son of a bitch. I mean, this is just. Anyway, in light of all this, the Obama administration has sprung into action. Mr. Obama announced that he is sending or sent the Secretary of the Interior, Ken Salazar, and oh my God, and Homeland Security, Janet Napolitano. They're both going down there or they're down there. I guess they were there tonight. They're there. Salazar and Napolitano are in the region to look at the globs of oil washing up onto the beaches in the marshes. Oh, well then, I guess everything's all right. Salazar and Napolitano are there looking at the damage. Whoa, thank God. Huh? Okay. Mr. Salazar, on Sunday, held a news conference outside BP's headquarters in Houston where he said, quote, "If we find they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, we'll push them out of the way." Really? How long does it take, Mr. Salazar, you crazy bastard? How long does it take to decide they're not doing, to use your words, what they're supposed to be doing? What they're supposed to be doing, Mr. Interior Secretary, is stopping the gusher. So what are you waiting for? Why not push them out of the way? Oh, that's right. The United States government does not have the equipment necessary to stop what is essentially the end of the world. Oh, well. Now, Mr. Salazar's position, of course, conflicted with one stated several hours earlier by the Commandant of the United States Coast Guard, Admiral Thad Allen, the nice-looking gentleman who looks like a seafaring captain who's in charge of, something important. Anyway, he said, Admiral Allen said, that the oil conglomerate, that would be BP's, access to the Mile Deep well site meant that the government could not take over the lead in efforts to stop the leak. So Salazar says, well, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, we're just going to push them out of the way and we'll do it. And the Admiral, Thad Allen of the Coast Guard, says, well, we can't do that because we can't do it. We just can't do it. The Admiral said on CNN's State of the Union program yesterday, quote, they have the eyes and ears that are down there. They are necessarily the modality by which this is going to get solved, end quote. The modality. Son of a bitch. They are the modality of the way this thing is going to get solved. Yes, indeed. Mr. Obama announced on May 14th a moratorium on drilling new wells and the granting of environmental waivers. What happened to that, Mr. President? He said, quote, "It seems as if permits were too often issued based on little more than assurances of safety from the oil companies. This cannot and will not happen anymore. And we're also closing the loophole that has allowed some oil companies to bypass some critical environmental reviews." Yes, we are. Maybe not today. But we are going to do it. We definitely are going to do it. And we're going to stand on BP and make them, you know, make all this go away. We're going to make them clean up things that cannot be cleaned up. It's literally impossible. But we're going to do it. By golly, we're going to do it. And we're not going to issue any more permits except, well, there might be a few slip through the safety net. But we're going to do it. And you know what I'm doing today? I'm sending down there to the dead zone. I'm sending Ken Salazar and Janet Napolitano. I'm sending two very important people down there, and they're going to look at the disaster. They're going to look at it. They're going to go like this. Wow. That's a disaster. What do you think, Janet?
Oh, it is, Ken.
Man. Well, we ought to do something. What are we going to do? I don't know. Let's just keep looking at it. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Program. Thanks for hanging out. Looks like we have a little bit of problem here with our Ustream video feed. We'll get it back up as soon as we can. Please don't send me any emails about it. I know. The Rusty, the puppy, got into the studio here and chewed through one of the main cables while we're on the air. So as much as we'd like to beat the dog, no, we're not going to do that. We'll just we'll take care of it. So just another night on the Malloy Program. But what makes tonight different from all other nights, you'll pardon the pun there, is Marcy Winograd, who joins us now. She is running in the 36th District of California against Jane Harman. And you can go to her website, Winograd 4, numeral 4, Congress. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Mike. Thanks so much for having me on your show again. I think we were together about a year ago when I first announced, and it's wonderful to be back.
Well, thanks for taking some time. I just read something the other day that you are closing in on Congressperson Harman.
Yes, that's right, Mike. After Harman released a bogus poll, which was really, I suspect, a push poll where they're pushing people to select a certain answer, we released what we found with our IVAR poll, which is an electronic poll, and basically it was this. She has 43% support. Mm-hmm. We are closing in on her. Many of the voters are still undecided, and usually undecideds break 2-1 for the challenger. So we think all of this talk about anti-incumbency fervor is great. We want to continue to talk like that.
Yeah.
And we want people to come help us call into the district and talk to voters, because this is the key race, Mike. The, mm-hmm. the world is watching, and so is the nation.
What has changed recently in your campaign, Marcy, on just about any level that you want to present? What has changed in the way you are conducting your campaign?
Sure. Well, in the final hours here, we are getting a little bit more aggressive. Today, we released a press release challenging Jane Harman to divest of her war finances. Mm. She has about $8 million invested in military contractors. We want her to divest prior to voting on this $33 billion Iraq and Afghanistan supplemental that's coming up. Mm-hmm. We also know that she has taken, just in this election cycle, the 2009-2010, over $60,000 from military contractors, and we're asking her to return that as well. We'll be taking her on more aggressively about housing, about banking, and all sorts of issues in the days ahead. In addition, Mike, we have received some terrific endorsements in the last few weeks. For example, the United Teachers of Los Angeles, representing 48,000 teachers in 750 locations, has endorsed Winograd for Congress, as has the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, who represents such a diverse population in our labor force, from aerospace workers to rail transportation workers to journalists of the LA Weekly. We're thrilled to have their support as we talk about transitioning to a green economy and expanding the reach of aerospace. We've also received the support from Democracy of America for America, and Progressive Democrats of America is out there mobilizing phone bankers for us, and some of them are coming to work with us right now at our headquarters in Marina Del Rey.
What will you do, Marcy, when you are elected and you do go to Washington? What will you do? What committees do you want to sit on?
Mike, I'd like to sit on two committees. One, appropriations, budget, because it's all about the money, right? How are we going to allocate our resources in the United States of America? Right now, we're spending about 50 cents of every tax dollar on the military, on war, on mercenaries, bases in three-quarters of the world, preemptive wars, occupations, while the people are literally starving, starving for food, starving for housing, starving for jobs and health care. This is wrong. We need to realign our priorities in America, and we need people in Congress who are determined to do that, which I am. In addition, I would like to be on the Education Committee. I'm a teacher. I'm on leave from the LA Unified School District, having taught most recently at Crenshaw High School. And I think I know a lot about education, having spent 15 years in this arena. And I think that we need a new direction. This No Child Left Behind, it may have been well-intentioned. I'm not sure, so sure about that, but I think for some it was. It isn't working. We see that this test-driven, punitive approach is not engaging our students.
What do you think should be done regarding education funding? Now, I heard today, I think I heard this on one of the newscasts here in the Atlanta area, the state of Georgia has decided to cut $950 million, almost $1 billion, from the money normally appropriated by the state Board of Education to local school boards. And the goal here, since this cut is being made, not the goal, but the reality is that these local school boards across the state of Georgia now are going to have the authority to make class sizes whatever they want it to be. And normally that's mandated by the state board of education, but the state board of education said, look, we're in a mess. We're going to cut $950 million. So you local boards of education, make your class sizes whatever you want. I don't think that got a whole lot of attention when it blew past on the 6 o'clock news tonight here in Georgia, but that's a brain scrambler. I mean, to think that, local boards can determine now how big the classes can be. 25 kids? 50. I know in LA that it's a mess. I know in the state of California what the governor there has I don't know, he's ordered furloughs or literal firings to thousands of teachers. What do you want to do to stop this? I mean, how can you stop it if there's no money?
Well, there is money. I think that's the bottom line. There is money. It's a question of where is the money being allocated and invested. Right now it's invested in a war economy. So for every million that we spend on the military, on weapons, on mercenaries, we could be doubling the number of jobs if we invested that same amount in transportation, and almost double it if we spent the same amount in education. So I say we're literally robbing our students when we continue with this kind of bloated military budget, almost $1 trillion right now. And in terms of class size, I'm for lowering class size and tying federal money to lowered class size.
How do you do this, though? How do you get the other 434 members of the House to consider that we are spending too much on these wars, on invasions, occupations, weapons that even appropriations that even the Defense Department doesn't want? I mean, the military doesn't want. How do you explain this to your colleagues? How do you get them motivated? Yeah, you will probably have 40 or 50 of other members of Congress who will agree with you instantly. How do you get the other 400?
I think first you have to organize the 40 or 50 to really stay on the ground. We have a Congressional Progressive Caucus with about 80 members.
80.
Mm-hmm. For many of us, the first time we ever heard about them was during the health insurance reform debate. We heard that they were going to hold out for a public option, which they did not do. They may have gotten some other things that they were fighting for. But at the end of the day, we were very disappointed that we are now mandated to buy private health insurance. It may be better than what we had before or what we have now, 90 million uninsured or underinsured. Mm-hmm. But we know that we could have gotten a better deal had we been more organized in Congress. Mike, I don't think anyone can do this alone, in isolation. This is going to take a massive organizing effort, working to get other progressives elected to assume leadership positions in the Progressive Caucus, to support a vigorous position on all of these issues so that we are working with the Progressive Caucuses in states around the country and developing some synergy, not separate and apart, attenuated pieces of our government, but part of a movement, and that's what this is about. I've been active in the California Democratic Party for many years, several years. In fact, I ran as a delegate largely because I wanted to end these wars. And we have elected a lot of progressives to the party. We have a progressive caucus that's bigger than any other caucus in the state party. So I think it's time that we worked with the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and that's one of the goals of Progressive Democrats of America, of which I am an organizer.
Well, I want to. Can you stick around?
Of course.
Okay, I want to ask you something when we come back. The influence of money, as you know, is a powerful corrupting. It is the corrupter in Congress, and corporate America is just flooding Congress with money. And I just when we come back, if you'll tell me how you're going to organize away from that. All right, let me put you on hold a second. We're talking to Marcy Winograd, who is the going to be the next member of Congress from the 36th District of California. Stay with us.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. We're talking with Marcy Winograd, who is running for the 36th District in California against the incumbent Gene Harmon. The money that corrupts everything and the influence of corporate America is the other issue, Marcy. That's the big issue, the really monster issue that sits kind of looking at all these other issues and diminishes them. How do you, when you're a member of Congress and you are part of, say, the Progressive Caucus, and you want banking reform, you want something that resembles the Glass-Steagall Act to be reimposed, to stop this madness. And the banking industry, the investment banking industry says, no, we don't want that. And so it doesn't happen. Or if the energy industry, the coal industry, members of the Progressive Caucus want rules in place for just simple scrubbers. No, we don't want that. How do you overcome that horrific influence now? It's not influence. It's almost
it's a stranglehold.
Yeah, stranglehold or
yeah.
It's ownership.
Yeah,
it's by corporate
the ownership
America.
Of Congress.
How do you do that?
What I would say is that we the people have to push back, and it has to start with us electing non-corporate candidates and asking candidates, what are you taking? Who are you taking it from? How much corporate money are you taking? Would you declare that you are going to be a non-corporate candidate and not take any corporate money? I think that's a very realistic place to start. It's doable. I'm running a non-corporate campaign, Michael. I haven't taken any money from corporations. If you go on opensecrets.org, it may list some companies. I don't know why, because I haven't taken any corporate money. Those people may work for those companies, but it's money from individuals. And we have raised $335,000 to date, which is it's a sizable amount, and we're hoping to raise $50,000 more in the next 2 weeks. So we are running a very strong campaign without corporate money, and that's what I would encourage others to do and would encourage the grassroots to do in terms of the demands that they place on candidates.
The huge oil spill, of course, it wasn't as huge as the Exxon Valdez or this horror that's going on in the Gulf now, but it was a monster back off the coast of California back in, when was it, the 70s, 60s?
I think it was in the early 70s.
Yeah, early
70s. Santa Barbara. Oil spill, and for years, I mean, even recently, if you walked along the beach in Santa Barbara, you had to put on a special liquid afterwards so that you could get the tar off your toes.
Oh, my God, after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
What will you do as a member of Congress to make sure that at least the West Coast of the United States doesn't have to deal with what those of us here in the Southeast are now faced with?
Mike, I'll fight very hard for a moratorium on all oil drilling off our coast, certainly any new offshore oil drilling. But I think we should have a moratorium right now, and I think what we need is an Environmental National Guard. We have this National Guard that we've shipped off to Afghanistan and Iraq. But we need an Environmental National Guard to deal with these kinds of horrific accidents. We need to be prepared. And in terms of what I'm going to do, I'm going to do much of the same as what I've done here in California. In my activism in the California Democratic Party, I've written a resolution which was passed at a time when the state's Lands Commission was holding hearings at the airport at LAX to decide, where are we going to drill next?
Mm-hmm.
What part of the California coast is up for sale or up for lease to help close the budget gap? And I immediately wrote a resolution, got it passed at the local level, at the state level, saying, absolutely not. Are you going to drill or going to do any new drilling off our California coast, our Golden Coast? And we need those kinds of voices in Congress to say, hands off. It's time to, if we have to turn off the lights for a little while, let's do that. But we don't need new oil drilling because we see what a disaster it can be.
Well, that's the thing. If anything, I would think that this catastrophe in the Gulf, that is, you know, the eventual or the ultimate cost, of this in terms of, species collapse, in terms of economic collapse, in terms of creating an enormous new dead zone off our coast. Those things are not just predictions now. There are a lot of scientists who believe this is a given. But if anything, wouldn't you think, wouldn't one think, that this points up that the gamble, the crapshoot, going after carbon-based energy after the mine disasters are just a continuing story in the coal mining industry, and now this. Wouldn't you think it's time for people to say we can't do this and switch to sustainable energy, to renewable energy, to whatever it is, solar power, wind power, geothermal power, hell, use the tidal waves, something.
Something, yeah. I mean, that's been the theme of my campaign, Mike, is that it's time to expand the reach of aerospace into the new green economy. Instead of building bombs, we should be developing solar and wind energy. We have the know-how. We have the talent.
Oh, my God, yes.
The brilliance. We can do it. It's a matter of political will. And perhaps this is the silver lining. I would hate to think that it came to this to wake us up. But it may just be the truth.
Can you stick around just another couple of minutes?
Of course.
All right. Well, let me put you on hold, and we'll come back. This is kind of a long break, but we'll come back and chat some more. We're talking with Marcy Winograd. She is running for Congress in the 36th District of California up against Jane Harmon. You can help her campaign any way you want. Go to Winograd, W-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, numeral 4, Congress. Winograd for Congress. We'll be back. Stay with us. is 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy Program. We're talking with Marcy Winograd. Her website is Winograd 4, numeral 4, Congress. She is running against Jane Harman for the 36th Congressional District in California. The attitude in the country right now, you're right, is anti-incumbent, which has a good side and has a bad side. I think there's a lot of people in Congress, Marcy, and the Senate for that matter, who should be turned out and just told to go home. By the same token, there are a lot of people, I still believe this, in the U.S. Congress and some in the Senate who are decent people who really are fighting against this tidal wave of corporatism and this tidal wave of the teabagger movement and so on and so forth. And two questions for you. First of all, I'm not sure in your district if there is any effect whatsoever from this these teabagger crazies. That's A. B. How are you getting people to overcome, or how do you expect to get people to overcome this fear right now that's in the country? When people get scared, as you know, they tend to stay with the familiar, no matter how bad the familiar might be. It's like, oh God, I better just stay where I am and not make a change, because if I make a change, oh, all hell's going to break loose. So how do you deal with that fear? And God knows it must be rampant in California. That, you know, let's do that first. How do you plan on dealing with that fear?
In terms of the fear factor, Mike, I think part of it is informing the voters. A lot of people, they're living their lives, they're working hard, they're struggling, and they may not be aware of all of the issues and all of the votes that have transpired. And once we tell people about my opponent's voting record, that she voted to make it easier for banks to foreclose on their homes, to hike their credit card rates, to make it very difficult for them to ever climb out of debt or clear their name should they have to go bankrupt. Once they know that, once they know that she has $8 million invested in military contractors at the same time that she continuously votes to take us to war, to keep us at war, then we find that people are not so reluctant to change, that they really want a Congress that is going to serve them. They want real representation. So a lot of it has to do with informing the voter. Another thing that's very true is that as people see you gaining momentum, they may switch because they want to be with the winner. And if they see that, we're reaching a tipping point here, and Marcy has all these endorsements, the teachers union, she's got the aerospace workers behind her, their union, she's got Democracy for America, Progressive Democrats of America, she's got a majority of the Democratic clubs in her district. Well, I'm for Marcy. You know, I'm for change. Change was not such a bad word when President Obama ran. We say we're for real change. Now, as far as your other question goes, how strong are the teabaggers in the 36th Congressional District, which, by the way, runs from West L.A., Mar Vista, Venice, all the way down through Marina del Rey, El Segundo, the beach cities, into Torrance and the harbor, San Pedro, Wilmington area. We do have teabaggers. In fact, I met one when I was at the L.A. County Registrar Recorder's Office submitting my ballot statement. Jane Harman doesn't have one. And I had a conversation with him about health care. Mm-hmm. And he said, we don't really have a health care problem. We don't need the government. Well, he didn't say we don't have a health care problem. He said, we don't need the government to solve our health care problem. He said, we can, the teabaggers, we have a doctor who will service us for free. He will do whatever, not for free, but for a very low cost. And I said, well, that's all well and good if you're a teabagger. But what if I don't agree with your political beliefs? Who's going to help me if I can't get health care in this country? Mm-hmm. And he just kind of looked at me. So I think we have to have conversations with him. I think I made a mistake, I'll be very honest, in the past in terms of calling all of these teabaggers racist. They're not. Some of them are very well-intentioned people, and they are upset, as I am, about this trillion-dollar bank bailout. I think we have to have conversations and find points of commonality. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to say that government is here to serve the common good. It's not about dismantling government. That's not the answer.
The other part of the fear factor, and I have to keep bringing this up because I think it's something any candidate's going to have to overcome. I really believe this. President Obama, who ran on this kind of ill-defined platform of change, change we can believe in, and so on and so forth. I've said on this program many times that the reason a lot of progressives or liberal Democrats are now disappointed with the direction of this administration where it concerns issues that were developed during the Cheney-Bush years are disappointed, these liberal Democrats, because, you know, Obama never said anything that was all that progressive. He didn't say he was going to withdraw from Afghanistan. As a matter of fact, he promised he was going to increase forces in Afghanistan. And you can go right down the line. So, I think there was a lot of buyer's remorse with, Democrats who, had to vote for Obama because, a couple of things. First of all, I think a lot of us believed and not wrongly so in so many ways that he did represent or would represent change, would take us back to sensible government, government regulations, government oversight, controlling spending. Not that I really care that much about federal deficits, but Obama was a blank slate, and a lot of progressive Democrats wrote whatever they wanted to on that blank slate. And now that it's not quite turning out the way progressive Democrats or liberal Democrats wanted, there's a lot of screaming and kicking, and some of it very justified. I certainly do it. How are you going to convince people that when you use this mantra of change, you mean it?
Well, I talk about my record, Mike. My life, much of my life has been about ending war. I started marching against the Vietnam War when I was in high school and attending those moratoriums, both in Los Angeles and marching with hundreds of thousands in San Francisco. I worked with Daniel Ellsberg on the Pentagon Papers trial and very good friends with Ron Kovic, co-founder of Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And in the run-up to the Iraq War, I became increasingly involved in protests, street vigils, organizing town halls. I organized one with Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I say, look at my record, look at my past, my history. It's not that I just came, you know, appeared out of nowhere. There is a past, there is a record. And so that's what I point to. And I say, look, we can either give up and shrug our shoulders and bury our heads, or we fight, and we have to fight. Now is not the time to give up. So there may be cynicism. I'll grant you that. There's plenty of cynicism. But I'm finding that our campaign is mobilizing people. I mentioned our headquarters, but we're mobilizing people across the country, Mike. We have phone bankers. I just wrote a list tonight in Georgia, in Pennsylvania, in Illinois. Plenty in California, both in Los Angeles and up in San Francisco, in that area. Anyone who is listening right now to this television show, if you agree with what I'm saying, that it's time that we had jobs and not just wars, I would invite you to phone bank and help me get elected. What is it going to take? It's going to take everybody who's listening to get on the phone and talk to voters in this district. What is it worth to have your voice in Congress? I think it's worth a lot.
Well, we are we're at a critical point, I believe, and a lot of people that I talk with and listen to and get emails from, we're at a critical point in this country, in this Democratic Republic, not just here but globally. We really are entering or are in up to our necks in a real crisis situation, not just the situation in the Gulf of Mexico, but the financial situation, this kind of warmongering that's going on in so many places. My God, I hate to open the Times in the morning. It's just rough, right now, I think for everybody. And I think the politician, and that word has got to reclaim its dignity. The politician, I think, who understands this and knows how to wire himself or herself into that reality and reach out to voters and say, look, yeah, we are facing just a hell of a mess, and I am one of these people that can work solutions. God, I hope you can do that, Marcy.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, and I just want to be clear on how people can help if they want to.
All right, go ahead.
Our website is Winograd, Winograd, 4, congress.com. Or the number 4, that's fine too. If you're very anxious to get started, I hope you are, please email my field director, bill@winograd4congress.com, and he will get you started tonight, or tomorrow morning, with a phone list. We have a virtual phone banking system. It's modeled after what Obama adopted in California, the Obama campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So people, as I mentioned, all over the country are calling, and that's what we need right now. We have 19% of our district is Latino voters, and we need people who have a facility in language, who are bilingual, to talk to them as well.
When is the primary, Marcia?
The primary is Tuesday, June 8th, but a third of our electorate will vote before Election Day. They're voting right now. They're voting mm-hmm. absentee. We figure we need 27,000 voters plus one to win this race. When I ran in 2006, Mike, in just 3 months of running, mm-hmm. I got 18,000 votes. That's right. So we just have to mobilize a few more people. We have had more time, and we have got a much stronger volunteer base, almost 200 volunteers working on this campaign.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely doable, but we need everybody to pitch in.
All right, Marcy, if you want to get talk again before the primary, just call Kathy. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
All
good
the
luck.
Best.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. We shall return after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. I got an email here from Bill. Before I get to that, support Marcy Winograd, for heaven's sake, okay? Just go to her website. Check her out. If you take a look at what she's about and you don't like it, okay. But at least check out this campaign she's running and what she's about. And, you know, I got an email here from Jude that said, if people could just contribute a little bit of money here, if everybody listening to this program would send in $10, well, hell, she'd have $40. You know what I mean? People talk about wanting, progressive Democrats in elective office. There are some progressive Democrats in office. There are some running for office. So, you know, talk is cheap. If you want to see some change and you want it to come through the electoral process and not as a result of some kind of dictatorial power that becomes necessary in order to save the entire society from collapsing, then vote for these progressive candidates if you live in the districts where they're running. And if you don't, for heaven's sake, a few bucks into the hat, especially in California's 36, where Marcy is running against a really entrenched corporatist Democrat. It's up to you. It's up to you. You know, people can just stay home. People cannot support these candidates. It's always up to you. It really is. Unless it's a situation where the voting machines are rigged, as the Republicans so often do. But of course, Jane Harman is a dino, Democrat in name only. She's not really a Republican. I don't know. I'm just saying there's a chance here to do something. I hope people who live in that district will take it. Bill in Paso Robles writes, Mike, on MSNBC today, attorney Mike Papantonio fairly screamed that there's no way to stop the mile submerged oil volcano. This was after David Axelrod's palavering about Obama's response to the Gulf disaster. Anyway, Papantonio Bill writes, was on fire. He said the anger among Gulf Coast people, quote, is so hot you can even taste it, end quote. He said the only thing to be done right now is to concentrate on cleaning up the ocean of oil, which is mounting into the millions of gallons or barrels. I'm sure that's what Bill means here. Millions of barrels. He said Obama has to summon tankers from the Middle East shipping lanes and elsewhere to come to the rescue the same way they did several years ago and cleaned up a 700 million gallon spill in Middle East waters. He said they sucked and strained 85% of the oil from the water during that huge spill. Papantonio vehemently repeated several times that he wanted to see Obama coming on from the bully pulpit with words more like Huey Long than Gandhi. Papantonio was beyond livid. We shall see if Obama can act, huh? Bill. P.S. Senator Byron Dorgan was almost shouting a few minutes earlier that we, quote, have to bring in oil experts from, quote, the entire planet, end quote. He mentioned specifically Norwegian deep-sea drilling veterans. What a horror. Yeah, what are we into now? Is this the ninth? How long is it? Are we in the sixth week? And these filthy sons of bitches at BP have still done nothing. The Obama administration has still done nothing except issue more permits for more drilling. Oh, I know what they said. Oh, they're not new permits. Okay. I think it's clear that corporate America, and that includes the Obama administration, are not going to do anything. They're not going to do anything. And get this. This is from Jeff. Hi, Mike. It's Jeff in Canada. Chevron wants to, this week, start drilling a deep water well off the Grand Banks of Newfoundland. Yes, the oil giant corporation wants to drill a well four times the depth of the one currently spewing oil into the Gulf of Mexico. This is complete madness, as you already know. However, these insidious corporations don't give a crap about human life or the planet. It isn't bad enough. These evil corporations are destroying the Gulf of Mexico. I guess now they're aiming to destroy the Atlantic Ocean, too. So we have oil companies destroying the water, airlines destroying the air, corporations destroying the earth. I guess the people of this world will not do anything until the very last moment when extinction threatens all life on Earth, which I must say is rapidly approaching. As a native Aboriginal person, I'm appalled at how fast this is happening. The biggest oil crime we have here in Canada is called the tar sands, and you ought to see the size of this environmental screw-up. You can see the toxic tailings ponds from Google Earth. That is, if they didn't censor it out. 20 years till meltdown. I really feel sorry for anyone who was born recently. They will inhabit a dying planet. Well, we can't let that happen. I mean, we can't let that happen. Can't let that happen. Nature Conservancy, big environmental organization, right? They've done lots of good. Nature Conservancy. Nature Conservancy. I'll share something with you when we come back after this break that you may find a little bit gagging. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. You turn the volume down on my mic a little bit. It's very, very, very high. Thank you much. That's better. We're going to take some calls here if you'd like to join in the fun of frivolity. The number is 877-996-2556. Now's the time to call if you want to. Oy, 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 oy. Hard to catch your breath, isn't it? Huh? It is for me. It's just hard to... To catch your breath. You know, Saturday morning, we drove further up into the... I mean, up in the mountains. We're in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. But we went way up into right where North Carolina and Georgia come together. And we have some friends up there who have a beautiful home tucked back in the mountains. A place that Chuck built, I don't know, a decade ago, more than that, 12, 14 years ago. And he and his wife, Ann, were there Saturday. We came up Saturday, and they had to leave early Sunday. So we stayed through most of the day. And boy, I'll tell you, we drove around. It's all up at an elevation of about 4,000 feet. I know to people that live in the mountains, that doesn't mean anything, in the western mountains. But here in Georgia, North Carolina, 4,000 feet, yeah, it's up there. It's beautiful. It's clean. It's quiet. Some of the streams are so pure, when you're thirsty, you just drink out of them. We drove around, walked around, did a lot of walking. Dog picked up 2 ticks. I picked up 1. And, and it's difficult in that setting I hate to use the word pristine. That word just doesn't work anymore. It's a word from another age. But there was so much about that part of the Georgia North Carolina mountains that has to be described as pristine. And Molly and the dog they just had such a good time. We went, did a little canoeing. A lot of walking. I don't know. We were walking around Sunday afternoon and walked up to a waterfall, huge waterfall. That is, it's not marked. It's not like waterfall. You have to know where it is. And did you post some pictures of that, of Molly cavorting? No, you didn't?
I have other pictures of Molly cavorting, but they're in her ballet costume at her kindergarten graduation. So every listener needs to run right now to their computer and go to MikeBloy.com, click on the gallery tab, and then Ms. Molly's pictures, because I put about 10 new ones up.
Okay.
So
No
cavorting in front of the waterfall.
No cavorting.
I'll get those up next.
In the water in front of the waterfall. Well, it's so difficult. The point of all this, it's so difficult to be in that setting. And think, even for a moment, about the horror that's occurring off the southeastern coast of the United States. And that is not going to be confined to the southeastern coast of the United States. Like Mike Papantonio said, there's no way to stop this. And we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. This is not going to stop. It really isn't. Not until the pressure that's gushing this oil out has reached a point where it just, I don't know the right term, I don't know, and I may be just crazier than a loon here, but it seems to me until the pressure pushing this oil and gas out starts to abate, starts to lessen, they were down, depending on who you want to believe, not forget the 5,000 feet of water. After they hit the rock and started punching a hole in the earth, how far down did they go? Another 5,000, 10,000, 15, 20, 25? Who the hell knows? BP's not going to say. These corporate murderers, they're not going to say. They don't give a goddamn. They couldn't care less. All those workers had died when the platform exploded and burst into flame. Nobody's even talking about that anymore. So apparently there's no way to stop this. And that's what BP is not saying. That's what the Obama administration is not admitting to the American people. Hey, American people, this thing is not going to be stopped. It's not. Wouldn't you think after 6 weeks, if there were a way to stop it, it would be stopped? So Papantonio's idea, why isn't the Obama administration doing that? Calling these tankers over here. Everybody, come here! Because if you don't, the disaster that continues to unfold is beginning in the Gulf of Mexico, but it's not going to stay in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, and you say that, well, it's not going to stop, not until it blows itself finally out. Well, Jesus, God, don't be talking that way. What kind of negative talk is that? Can't do that. Don't you have any faith? No, I don't. In corporate America? In a government that is owned by corporate America? Faith? Are you out of your mind? Yeah, I know. The Nature Conservancy. In the days after the immensity of what's occurring in the Gulf of Mexico became clear, some Nature Conservancy supporters took to the organization's website to vent their anger. One wrote, first thing I did was sell my shares in BP, not wanting anything to do with a company that's so careless. Another wrote, I would like to force all the BP execs, the secretaries, and the shareholders out to the shore to mop up oil and wash the birds. Another one called for a boycott, quote, of everything BP has her hands in. What that poster didn't know was that the Nature Conservancy lists BP as one of its business partners. Huh? The Conservancy also has given BP a seat on its International Leadership Council and has accepted nearly $10 million in cash and land contributions from BP and affiliated corporations over the years. Do you find that the least bit disturbing? Do you, Kathy? The Nature Conservancy. The Nature Conservancy. Corporate partners with the corporation that is turning out to be the single most destructive force, corporate force, ever unleashed, as witness what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico. And the Nature Conservancy, this is, somebody wrote an article, and I read it a couple of weeks ago, and I didn't do what I should have done, and that's bring it on the program. But it listed, was it Mother Jones? I forget what site it was that listed the ties between the so-called corporate conservation or environmental groups. Almost every single one of them is totally prostituted by corporate America, because these environmental groups that you and I have been contributing to, that you and I thought were doing something at least have some kind of stewardship over the environment, are in bed with these corporations. They take money from them. How do you take money from somebody like BP? Millions of dollars. How do you do it? And then turn around and suggest that BP, that the executives should be taken out and horsewhipped, or taken out, put in prison as material witnesses until this disaster has run itself out, and then put on trial for these criminal acts. How do you do that if you're the Nature Conservancy? You know the quick answer? You don't! We'll be right back.
don't have to. It's more Mike Malone.
It is 21 past the hour. Press release from Greenpeace. Today, 7 Greenpeace activists were arrested for standing up to the oil industry, sending a message to Secretary Salazar that we must stop offshore drilling. The activists were Lindsay Allen, Lauren Valley, Emma Cassidy, David Pomerantz, Georgia Hursty, Scott Cardiff, and Paul Kelly. They've been charged with the felony charge of unauthorized entry of a critical infrastructure and unauthorized entry of an inhabited dwelling. In response, Greenpeace Executive Director Phil Radford issued the following statement. Charging these activists with felonies is a disproportionate response to the peaceful protest that took place today at Port Fourchon. It is outrageous that prosecutors would confront peaceful protesters with such a heavy hand, while not a single BP executive has been charged for the devastation they have wrought on the Gulf of Mexico and the people and animals that depend on it. Greenpeace staff, scientists, and volunteers have been in Louisiana for weeks, taking water samples, bearing witness, and documenting the devastation that has been unleashed on the Gulf of Mexico. We have seen firsthand the damage that this has done to the ecosystem, the community, and the local economy, and sympathize with the people who make Louisiana their home or depend upon the Gulf for their livelihoods. Today, activists use that same oil to ask Interior Secretary Ken Salazar to make sure this never happens again. This Friday, Secretary Salazar will decide whether or not to allow offshore drilling in the Alaskan Arctic waters, where the Coast Guard says an oil spill would be a, quote, nightmare scenario, end quote. I'm proud that these activists stood up to big oil and government incompetence today, and if we are to move past the mistakes of the past toward a clean energy future, we'll have to heed today the words they painted and the urgency with which they painted them. Go to greenpeace.org if you want to see what they painted. Greenpeace does not accept contributions from governments or corporations. The Nature Conservancy accepts millions of dollars from corporate America. I don't know. It's getting harder and harder, isn't it? I imagine it's getting harder and harder to listen to this program. It's getting harder and harder to do this program. To go through, look at this. To go through, I say look at this to the to the people who are watching the video stream. That's only 150 people. What I'm showing here is a stack of printouts of stories that, just from today's research, all of which, each one is more frightening than the other. BP kept using toxic chemical in Gulf after the EPA deadline. BP, quote, doesn't know what it's doing. BP up to more bad crap. Environmental groups doubt government can fix the spill. Obama has learned nothing from the BP blowout. It just goes on and on. BP and the little Eichmanns. It just goes on and on and on. And the pictures that were taken by both, I think it was NBC and CNN, camera operators, somehow they got NBC got within 3 miles of the where the drilling platform used to be. You could see it off in the distance on the horizon, and they were sending cameras down 500 meters, 1,500 meters, 1,000 meters. And what they were showing, these videos that they were taking, they have now turned over to scientists who can analyze exactly what this represents in terms of the horrific damage that's being done. to arrest people who are protesting is so typically an example of corporate America. It's an example of the corporate control over law enforcement. It's an example of corporate control over the government. Paiush Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, is making impassioned pleas for assistance. This is the same Paiush Jindal who had the temerity to refer to Barack Obama in a very negative way, suggesting that any sort of government interference in anything was tantamount to open, naked socialism. And now all of a sudden, Paiush Jindal is getting very angry and pissed off because the coastline of his state is ending. But it has nothing to do with Barack Obama. When you get right down to it, Governor Jindal, it has to do with your oil buddies that are already devouring your state. Stay with us.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 24:25 before the hour. We're going to post a link. Lauren sent us this link. Probably some of you already have it, but the live cam, video cam of the of this disaster, the oil gusher down 5,000 feet, courtesy of BP. So we'll get that posted. What else? Just very quickly here. This is from WallStreet.com, not the Wall Street Journal, WallStreet.com. The U.S. government has readily admitted that it does not have the skill or equipment to stop the oil rising from the wreck of the Deepwater Horizon rig, and it's beginning to question whether BP does, has any solutions at all. That leaves the possibility that the release of crude, which is variously estimated up to 100,000 barrels a day, may go on indefinitely. BP said today, Monday, that its total cost for the disaster is now $760 million. Oh, please. Secretary of the Interior Ken Salazar told the press on Sunday he was not completely confident BP knows what it's doing. BP admitted over the weekend that its current capture device was not working as well as expected. That means that the amount of oil which is reaching the Louisiana coastline now will rise. The amount of crude making its way into the loop current will also increase. BP is still trying to organize itself for a top kill to stop the flow of oil by pushing mud down the leaking hole. If that does not work, it will drill adjacent wells into the ocean's bottom, a process that could take several months. BP and the government may actually be faced with a situation they cannot solve. Other oil companies have offered aid, but it seems unlikely that they have technology better than BP's. Iran has even offered to send help. Reporters from the Washington Bureau of McClatchy newspaper chain recently wrote a story entitled Fear Over Gulf Oil Spill, What Happens If They Can't Stop It? That question, unimaginable a week ago, has become more pertinent as each day goes by that BP fails. As hard as it may be to admit, the leak may be beyond the ability of technology to stop. And only the eventual exhaustion of the pressure from under the ocean's floor will stop the spill from expanding. Doug McIntyre wrote that at wallstreet.com. Wallst. WALLST.com. Isn't that what we had? Who is the guy whose two articles I read on this program? Not Michael Clare. It was Pure Energy Systems News, PSN. Pure Energy Systems News and .com. And the article we read too, the author turns out to be somebody who's involved in some pretty freaky stuff as far as I'm concerned. But that website, the author of that, pretty much laid this all out three weeks ago, that this thing was not going to be stopped. It's not. This is just an example. Paul Noel, the guy's name. Paul Noel. Well, now it appears that everything he has written, even though he may be a rapture-ready freak or he may be a birther, it looks like the science that he wrote about is true, or I don't know if science is the right term, if the scope of this disaster he wrote about is true. And, you know, the idea that this is going to keep gushing oil while we enter into hurricane season, I mean, these sons of bitches are insane. I mean, nobody's talking about this except, you know, a few people, like, talking about it here. You pick an article up there. Some blogger will say, you know, what's going to happen when you have a category 3 or 4 or, God forbid, a category 5 hurricane slam into the Gulf of Mexico with this stuff, this poison? And, you know, once the hurricane hits the Gulf Coast and drops in force, it loses its hurricane force winds, it travels through the mid-Atlantic states, dumping water all over the place. And the water is, Kathy, have you thought about this? The water is going to be saturated with oil. And then what happens if there's a lightning strike someplace or whatever the hell it is? And don't email me, please, and tell me, oh, lightning can't set the stuff on fire. I mean, for God's sake. Oh, I'm getting too panicky. Never mind. Patrick is in Monterey, California. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Rhetorical question.
How are you?
I'm still going to keep listening. You know, what else can I do?
Okay.
I've got four things I wanted to bring up. I originally had one. I think people should go to commondreams.org. They've got some good stuff on there right now.
Okay.
People who are familiar with that website,
yeah.
If you're going from left to right across the top, there's four vertical columns. They're marked further, news, views, and then the far right column is called Progressive Newswire. Under the views column, very current today, May 24th, the title of the article is, Yes, Mr. President, it was your Katrina 3 weeks ago. Now it may be your Chernobyl by Robert Reddick. And into the far left column further, if you scroll down and click on furthermore, the May 21st article is titled, This is Ecocide, and I think there's a link that you can sign a petition. There's a movement to declare ecocide a fifth international crime against peace, which I think is a brilliant idea. The main thing I wanted to bring up when I talked to Kathy about online or off the air was the idea that it was like when I was up in the Bay Area about a year or two ago, I think it was reprinted in one of the San Francisco publications, The Bay Guardian, or something like that, from the San Jose Metro. And I think I found it. The first article is called Panic Shroom by Alistair Bland. And the subtitle is Are Mushrooms and Human Hair the Organic Answer to Toxic Disasters Like the Spill in the San Francisco Bay? And I found another article. That was January 8th, 2009. I'll send you guys a link.
Okay.
And there's another article There's another article that I found almost a year earlier in the New York Times titled, it's April 27th, 2008, by Annie Coriel, and it's titled, To Clean Up Pollution, California Town Considers the Mushroom. And it's basically, the first one I mentioned, Panic Shroom, is talking about oyster mushrooms. And I was thinking about this for the last couple of weeks, and I remember the Paul Noel guy that you brought up his article 3 or 4 weeks ago, about this article that I came across, and it had like a psychedelic cover on this, you know, San Francisco publication. But I was thinking, well, these dispersants that they say now are too toxic, I'm wondering if those would kill the mushrooms. But then again, I thought, well, okay, as far as the marshlands and the wetlands, maybe they could have like a continuous airdrop of these mushrooms in the wetlands themselves, because you can't take boats in there and you can't go in by foot, because just traveling through there will destroy the fragility of that ecosystem. But I thought, well, maybe if they airdrop them in the marshlands, maybe the mushrooms might become an invasive species. But I guess that's better than having just mud there. So I wanted to bring those four things out to you guys.
Okay. Well, I think going to Common Dreams is a good idea. They really have a good collection of articles there, and we will do that. Thanks a lot for that, Patrick.
Hey, I got a song for you. If you can, I don't know if you have time to find it tonight. I sent Kathy, not to be presumptuous, you guys, but you guys play the best bumper music in all of talk radio, bar none. Your stuff is amazing. But it's a great, you know, righteously angry pro-environment song by Adrian Blue. It's also applicable to the little flying monkey from Alaska. It's called Men in Helicopters by Adrian Blue.
If you can find a link to it, send me a link and we'll play it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
You guys keep it up. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Hang in there, Patrick. Appreciate you checking in. You know, not to relate things through my consciousness, but that's all I can do in my little world. So I'm sure you do it in your way. But I think a lot about this program and my role in this program and how I've always had something to say. For 25 years working in talk radio, I've always, I've had the mouth, right? Diary of the mouth. You give me a topic, I'll talk about it. There's nothing I can say about this. I don't know what to say. Because anything that I would say about this disaster that BP has given us, and Cheney and Bush gave us, and the entire oil industry has given us, and Barack Obama's administration seems to not be able to deal with, you understand what I'm saying? What the hell are you going to say about it? You know, I'm out of words. Before the hour, this is the Malloy program. Back to your calls. Chuck is in Knoxville, Tennessee, listening on Sirius. Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
All right. How are you?
No, I'm hanging in there. I got to see your pictures tonight online. Molly's really cute.
Oh, thanks.
I want to talk about Florida a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
Florida is not like the rest of the continental U.S. It's built on an ancient coral reef. And as such, it's extremely porous. The water table in Florida is never more than a few inches above ground level.
Right.
Or below ground level.
Below ground, yeah.
And it has thousands of springs. and those springs. In the 70s, when I was a teenager in high school, I remember reading about the fact that they took some glycerin plugs and shot them into some caves out in the Bahamas, and they came up in the middle of the state of Florida in the springs.
Mm.
And I don't know what the side is, what the story is on the Gulf side. But if, in fact, it turns out that it's the same as on the Atlantic, these idiots who have dropped this dispersant in the water without knowing what the hell they were getting into may have very well destroyed the entire water supply of Florida.
Yeah, the possibilities, Chuck, as you're pointing out, I hadn't even thought of it, I hadn't even heard of that one. But the possibilities for ecocide, if that's the right word, the death of the ecology of that whole state that just sticks out into the Gulf and the Atlantic. I mean, it just sticks out there. The death of that entire state is it's entering now into the realm of probability and not possibility. And I,
you know what it's going to be like to try to supply water to 14, 17 million people?
Don't even. I mean, they're having enough trouble now with the water table that, as it exists in Florida.
The wildlife and everything will be, all the wildlife will be destroyed, not just the stuff near the shoreline and so forth. I mean, it will literally destroy the entire ecosystem of Florida. And this argument that it will be carried by the Gulf Stream out into the Atlantic, that's a crock of shit.
Okay? No, wait, wait.
I'm sorry. I forgot.
All right. Okay. We caught it. So don't say another bad word. Okay. I'm not going to hang up on you, but, you know you can't use that, right? Where's Chuck?
I'm here.
Okay. Chuck's there.
Anyway, what I was going to say is any student of fluid dynamics will tell you that, yes, the mainstream will be carried out into the Atlantic, but there will be eddies that will flow back.
Oh, yeah. And
into the shoreline. It will destroy Pamlico Sound in the Carolinas. It'll destroy the Chesapeake Bay.
Right.
Because by the time they get this well dug down in there to try to relieve some of the pressure, it's not going to really relieve that much pressure. Now, if they dug a dozen wells simultaneously... The only thing is that there seems to be the problem is that the bedrock is too soft to support a pipe to stay in place to provide for proper drilling.
Oh, great.
Or for a proper well. That seems to be what the problem is, the best I can understand what they're running into.
Well, you know, anybody who does not understand, anybody over the age of 40 or 35 who didn't learn in school about the Gulf Stream current, and why you can grow crops in the British Isles because of that current. Anyone who thinks that this stuff is not going to wind up polluting northern Europe and then down, and then doesn't it start heading down the coast of Europe, heading south towards the Mediterranean,
right,
towards Africa? I mean, Jesus God, the possibilities are endless for just total disaster here. And
at the rate they're going, they will not only kill the Gulf, they'll kill the Northern Atlantic.
Well, once that happens, then, you know, you kill the oceans, you kill the human race. It's just, you kill everything.
They're really working on it, I'll tell you what.
All right, Chuck, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. All right, take care. See, that's what I mean. How can you even talk about this stuff? I mean, there's no upside to this. Didn't I have somebody last week, Kathy, who wanted to present the other side to this? Some crazy son of a bitch who wanted to. Oh, that's right. The guy who said he was a Marine, the George Costanza character, said he's a Marine biologist. Well, there's another side. Yeah, sure there is, you freak. Oh my God. I don't know. What is on Sirius? What's her name in the afternoon? Lynn Samuels. What is? You know, I haven't listened to Lynn for a couple of weeks. I'm going to have to tune in to Sirius Left tomorrow. What is that? 146, channel 146. Because I can just hear Lynn unleashing a string of F-bombs. On her program, I'll have to do that tomorrow. Tune in to Lynn Samuels. When this show's over tonight, please stick around. Streaming right behind us is a rebroadcast of Bob Kincaid's program from Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. It comes courtesy of White Rose Society, run by Ben Birch. So if you are listening online, if you, do they have to switch anything or does it just come on behind us? You think it just comes on? Yeah, if you're listening on White Rose Society, link, just stay there and, check out Bob Kincaid. You ought to do that every night. Shame on you if you don't. Bob Kincaid's program, which comes up right after this one on the webs. I'll see you tomorrow night. Sorry to depress you. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Day ever?